Hi, my name is Juliette, and I'm the host for this podcast. I'm studying to be a rabbi, and I'll be ordained next January, which is very exciting. And in Judaism, there's a special portion or reading from the Torah. This is the Hebrew Bible for every week of the year. And as we go through these readings week by week in order from the beginning of the Torah to the end, from the beginning of the Jewish year to the end, we analyze the stories and we comment on them. And of course, connecting them to real life, to contemporary life, is how these ancient stories come alive, which is one of my great passions as a rabbi. I hope you'll accompany me as I tell these stories of Torah and of my life and the lives of others. And if you miss an episode, you can always go back and find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for coming on this ancient and contemporary journey with me. And though I give these podcasts freely, your donations are always welcome and needed to continue this work. You can go to my website, lenegditamid.us. That's L N as in nincompoop, E G D I T A M as in mums, ID.us. lenegditamid.us. That means putting the sacred before you continually. Or before me, actually. Okay, so today I'm late in getting this podcast out. I was supposed to get it out before last Friday when I wrote my blog, which you can find on my website. But I had just returned from Miami a few days before, and I was sick with COVID. So I'm getting better. I'm almost better, feeling much better. But I was not up to doing podcasts. My voice was just, you can still hear it a little bit. My voice was not up to doing it. So here we are with Miami Vice, Bamidbar. We're in the desert. And, so I'm going to tell you about this Miami trip. I got a phone call at noon on Thursday, the week before last. I was almost 3 hours north of New York City, and the main leader teacher of this trip of 15 teens, Latinx and Jewish, it's called the Jewish Latinx Youth Council at the Washington Heights and Inwood YMYWHA, an incredible program for Latinx and Jewish teens to get together, to know each other, to share each other's cultures, to share their own cultures with each other. And I was very interested in this program. And suddenly I get this phone call, and first it's a phone call and I don't answer because I don't recognize the number. And then it's a text and I'm like, oh, this is urgent. Oh, I see who this is from. So I answer, and they need a replacement for this person because she got COVID. And I got COVID on the other end of the trip. Isn't that ironic? Okay. So he says to me, the leader, not just a leader, he's the director of the, or I think he's interim director of the Y. Anyway, that's not important. He says, could I make it to JFK by 6 o'clock that evening? And it was 12 o'clock noon. And I'm like, yes, I can make it. Yes. It was so crazy, but I did. And I made it there before anyone. It was insane, but I got there on very little sleep from the night before. And it was my first time in Florida. And yes, I know that's very unusual for a Jew, but I am an unusual Jew. Everybody was telling me, like, you've never been to Florida, but you're Jewish. But it's true. I grew up in a family that was very anti-Florida. Like it was anti-Israel. So yes, I grew up in an unusual Jewish family in that way. Here I was going to Florida. It's like, I was wondering when I was ever going to go to Florida. And so, it was amazing. I barely slept for 4 days. But it was an amazing trip, and it was the culmination of this year-long, almost culmination of this year-long program for these teens. And yet, What was interesting, what I found out when we got there, was they had barely interacted until now. I'm imagining everybody masked, you know, meeting in a room, not being able to hear each other well, but also, you know, they're separated by their groups. They were from three different schools. There were Orthodox Jewish boys from a private school, from a Jewish day school. Then there was a group of Latino kids from their public schools, two other schools. And those who knew each other, they clung to each other. They were, you know, in their safety. So they're in their own little safe groups. And then there's this one Jewish girl who didn't have a tribe at all. Like, I'm thinking of these people as having their little tribes, right? And they just were like, yeah, really hard. So this was our job, to get them to talk to each other, to get them to interact and to bond. Late in the year, but better late than never, right? I mean, COVID has been a complication, but it was also the first year that this group formed. So who knows for next year? Anyway, back to the trip. We went to museums. We did community gardening. We took salsa dance lessons. We went to the beach. Yes, we did get to the beach. That was beautiful. But the whole thing was beautiful. But the most important thing was the time, you know, besides the museums, the community gardening, all of these things. I mean, the salsa dance, I think that was definitely a highlight at the end of the trip, because the kids knew each other by then, and they were finally comfortable with each other. And what made that happen was that we spent time together in small groups, mixed the kids up. We had our little families, and we spent time sharing and listening to each other's stories in these smaller mixed groups. We forced the kids to separate. So I had two Jewish kids in my group who were friends from their little group. And I had two Latina girls from different schools. And it was through these personal stories that the kids finally connected across what I think of as this vast cultural and socioeconomic chasm that separates us in our society. Little by little, they opened up to each other, and each one felt heard. Each one felt like they counted. And we as adults had to be examples to them. We had to model for them what it meant to tell our stories of who we are, where we come from. And it was about our mixed identities also. None of us has just one identity. We all have many identities. And for me, the story that I told about my family, which was very different from anybody else that they had ever met. I mean, I think it's different. Well, I have met people like me in some ways, but I grew up in a Jewish family with two parents who were atheists, who rejected their religion, rejected Judaism. My father was second generation in the United States. My mother was first generation. And both of them sneered at Judaism. My mother grew up with Orthodox parents in Queens, New York, and my father grew up in Manhattan. And he was very assimilated, but and his parents came from Russia and Hungary back in the late 1800s, and my mother's family came in the early 1900s from Austria, yeah, which was really, I found out when she died, was really Poland. It was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So here were these two Jewish people. She grew up Orthodox and didn't want any part of it. And they met in politics, because of politics. They were both involved. He was already involved in left-wing politics, and she got it. They met at some educational thing. And they ended up joining the Communist Party together in the 1950s, when everybody was leaving the Communist Party because of Stalin. And then I grew up and married a Latino man, and my children, I wanted them to be raised Jewish. That was very important to me. It was a cultural Jewish thing, but I felt drawn to it. I wanted a rabbi at our wedding. We had a rabbi and a priest. and my husband promised that we would, per my request, that we would raise our children Jewish, and we did. So now we have these, one of them at least identifies herself as a Jew of color. The other one, I'm not sure if she says of color, but they have a Latino father who has African and Native, Native South American mixed in with some European, and so this is our family, and very mixed identity. So we were trying to get, the kids also to, right. And I forgot. And so all my life I was a teacher, Spanish and ESL in public schools. I was devoted to that. This was my social justice work in the world, teaching these populations of low socioeconomic status and recent immigrants. And I left that work to become a rabbi. And it was a very hard decision for me to make, to leave that. I felt really guilty, like I was abandoning my social justice work. And I had never really thought of it as social justice work, but it was. You know, I realized that at some point. And I was like, what am I going to do? Who am I serving now? Am I serving, I'm serving only the Jewish population? Do they need me? But I had this passion. How, in what ways do they need me? And sure they do, but I didn't feel like they were, you know, this is an underserved population. And I felt the pull to do this. And here I ended up in this group as a leader, as one of the leaders of this group on this trip of Latino and Jewish kids. And my family and my experience engulfed all of it. You know, we went to synagogue, we went to shul on Saturday, on Friday night and Saturday. The Latino kids learned a lot about Judaism. And I was this person who spoke Spanish with them and could relate to them. They really appreciated the, like, wow, mixed identities. And there was a boy on the trip. He was in my group, who is adopted from a Guatemalan village. He obviously looks like he comes from really native roots, and he was adopted into an Orthodox Jewish family. And I mean, talk about mixed identities, you know. And it's really hard. He's just forming his idea of who he is, and it was really hard for him to talk about his adoption and what he knows and what he, I mean, I have no idea what he feels about it, really. You know, I just finished reading this book called it's by Lisa C. I highly recommend it. It's fascinating if you want to learn about, it's a story of adoption, but it's a story of tea gatherers in China, a very small minority tribe that has their own language, the Akka people. And it's called The Tea Girl of Hummingbird Lane. And you learn about the whole identity crisis of adoptees who come from other countries, and also the preserving of old customs. And it just, so here I was with this kid who's Guatemalan, adopted by a Jewish family, and what do you feel? And how do you talk about that? Well, I didn't, you know, I mean, this was just their kids, you know, it's there's only so much they can be in touch with at this point, you know, and it's hard. You know, you want to fit in where you are. And here he is in a Jewish day school with all white kids, all Jewish white kids, like not different from him. And so what does it mean to fit in, and how do we identify all our multiple, but all of us have multiple identities. You know, I'm a teacher, I'm a mother, I'm a rabbi, I'm Jewish, I'm what I call myself. I almost feel like part Latina now, you know, because of 34 years living, and more than that, living with Latino culture as well. So it's interesting. So back to the trip. I mean, as a result of all of our sharing as adults, of our backgrounds and our identities, we had two young Latina women, one Dominican, one Mexican American, as the leaders, and then an Argentinian guy who's a Jewish guy. He's the director. So what are all these identities? And he's half Ashkenazi, half Sephardic. And so what is the, you know, so we were all sharing, and we all came from such different backgrounds. And as a result, like I said, each of the kids felt heard, and they felt like they counted. They felt important. They felt seen. And by the last day, they were dancing together. I mean, we were supposed to do the dancing. We were supposed to do the salsa dancing on the first day, and it had to be canceled. And we didn't know. Everybody was very disappointed. But it was so perfect to do it on the last day, because by then, the kids had really bonded, and everybody was willing to put themselves out there. And the Latino kids were so happy to show, this was their thing, you know, this was their music. And we did bachata, and they were going crazy with the music. And the Jewish kids joined in, and they were doing it. They were willing to, you know, just imagine these Jewish boys with, and it took so much courage for them. It took so much courage for them to leave their communities, even to take a day off from school. They had to talk to the rabbi at the school. I guess he's the head, you know, a head or something like that. But he really didn't want them to go. Maybe he's aware that they're involved in this group before, but he really was discouraging them. He was like, we have four walls, we need to protect. And ugh, just so painful to hear that. So painful how fearful our communities are or can be of this protection. And I understand the history behind it, but we need to open up. This is how I feel. We need to open up. It's so important. And these boys actually had the nerve to say to him, we think three walls is enough. As my friend said, like a sukkah, right? Three walls is enough. Like, this is crazy. It's disgusting. And this is why we don't talk to each other. If we don't talk to each other, how can we get to know, how can we find common ground? And this is what I said to the kids on the last night, the last evening, when we were talking about what we would bring back to our communities and how we think that this will serve us in the future, how we think that this is going to be, what we want to get from this and what we want to take home. And I said, you know, I've thought about, as a rabbi, doing work between Palestinians and Jews. And I'm very attracted to this work because I love the idea of a bridge. And I told them about the organizations in Israel and the United States that work on this, that do work on this, of bringing Muslims and Jews together and hearing each other's pain and each other's stories. And I think that's so important. How else are we going to find peace? How else? And they have camps, you know, and I said, but now I see that I can do this work right here in my own home. I don't need to go to Israel. I can do this in my home in New York City, of bridging you know, here we have a community, Washington Heights and Inwood. It's highly Latino now, but the Jews have come back. It used to be very Jewish. It's becoming more Jewish again. It's a mix. And yet these communities live peacefully side by side, but they don't talk to each other. And here's this Y, a Jewish Y, in the middle of this neighborhood that is bringing the two communities together. And what a beautiful thing to create this kind of bridge. So this is what I want to do. I mean, this is one of the things I really want to do. And it was so incredible to see by the last day that these kids were dancing together. They were playing together. They stayed up way too late. Couldn't get up in the morning to get on the airplane. You know, hiding. I don't know. Playing hide and seek around the hotel. I have no idea. They were doing some crazy stuff. And then watching TV because, of course, you know, you're in a hotel and here are teenagers with no adult watching them when they're in their rooms, right? And they're going to watch TV until God knows what hour of the morning. And they're jumping in the hotel pool together. And so it was just so beautiful to see that they had finally bonded. Now to the Torah portion of this week. We began the fourth book of Torah, Numbers, Bamidbar in the desert. And the first thing that happens in this book, in this last book it's not the last book. What am I talking about? Why did I say that? In the fourth book, everyone is counted. Each tribe, each individual. But you'll notice it's each male is each individual. And it's a male of a certain age that's capable of participating in war. Okay, so who does it leave out? We have to be truthful. But that's it's an important fact. First you're like, ugh, that's disgusting, every male. What about the females? What about blah, 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 right? Other people don't count. That's an important fact, that's not what's written there. Because it begs the question, who among us is not counted? Who doesn't count in society's wider eye? One of the things we did as a group was learn about the housing crisis in Florida, especially in Miami. Everywhere we went, there were buildings going up, construction. There's so much speculation going on in the market, so much construction, but it's all for the wealthy, and the average local person is being priced out. Gentrification, just like in New York City. And this vice that I saw in Miami of overconsumption of resources. I mean, fancy buildings, high blasting air conditioning, bottled water, and leaving the door open. It's like, let's leave the door. I mean, we do that in New York too. Well, let me not lie. That's true. But it drives me crazy when I see that. And you go into a space and it's like 65 degrees and you're freezing, and outside it's 85 or 90 and you're boiling. And why? Why do we do this? And all the bottled water, and nobody in Florida drinks the water. You can't drink the water. I know that a lot of people have filters, but then there are a lot of people like in New York who buy bottled water. Now, there's nothing wrong with the water in New York City, but there are people, so many people who don't trust it for a good reason. There are places around the country where you cannot drink the water, right? And so I don't fault them for thinking that way, but there are ways where we don't have to throw away all these plastic bottles and all the bottles that come from, oh my God, I mean, they're importing water from Fiji and from far away places, you know, and it's like, why do we bought into this? We think that's okay. And it's not. And this is a place, getting back to Florida, where nature did not intend to have large human populations. And here's this overconsumption and overuse of the resources. And it's something that's happening all over our country. As a society that supports market speculation, we're building where we shouldn't be for those who don't need it, and we're not counting those who need to be counted. They're being counted out. They're being shut out. And seeing the immensity of the problem in such a concentrated way in Florida, in Miami, made me feel so overwhelmed and helpless. It was depressing to me. But at the same time, I was given an incredible gift. Being with these young people, hearing them exchange their stories, seeing them connect despite vast differences, and listening to their solutions to the problems. Their passion and their drive to make change happen, it gave me hope. And I told them that. I told them, if they are our future, then there's hope. If they are our future, there's hope for the future of humanity. So there was a small amount of healing in our tiny corner of the earth that weekend over Memorial Day. And I want to emphasize again that this hope for the future, and may we be blessed with more healing and more connection as we go forward. Thank you. See you soon. Talk to you soon.